Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. That's right, 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. I'm on the road again, as I told you earlier. I'm on the road traveling around. Actually, not traveling around now. I'm where I'm going to be for a few days. We've taken a few days off, so to speak, but, of course, it doesn't sound like it, right, because I'm doing my radio show. But, you know, doing my radio show, folks, is not work. I love this. So that doesn't count as work, does it? I don't think so. Anyway, I'm looking out over the Intercoastal Waterway here where I am, where I told you that I am, and we've had a little rain shower to come through, little kind of a small thunderstorm, and I'm looking at the most beautiful rainbow that's just appeared in these clouds, and I haven't seen one in a while. It's a beautiful thing, a beautiful part of nature. Jim Ostroff is with us. He's a beautiful thing, too. I've seen Jim. He's a beautiful guy. He's one of our good friends and a longtime member of our Brain Trust, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I bet nobody's called you beautiful lately, Jim.
Good morning, all America, and I must say,
don't forget ships at sea, Jim. We're around the world.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all ships at sea, and I'm sitting here with my pot of gold because I went to the other end of the rainbow and came back. And here we are.
How long has it been since somebody called you beautiful, Jim?
I would say since maybe, I was 6 weeks old or so.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know.
And your grandmother said, isn't
my
he beautiful, right?
He's a beautiful boy. You know, he's a beautiful boy. Look at this kid. And no one else since. And A, I wouldn't appreciate it. And B, it ain't true. But whatever. But it's all.
But folks, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And we always like having Jim on the show. Hey, Jim, tomorrow is the 4th of July.
That's right.
And I'm going to be broadcasting live from be my 11th 4th of July show to broadcast, and looking forward to that. But what's going to be happening in our nation's capital on the 4th of July?
Well, you know, I mean, I should say, fortunately, most members of government have cleared out already. And
I always feel safer when that happens.
We're much safer with that. And, but basically, you know, what you have here, it really is a wonderful time to be in Washington because it is of the people, by the people, and for the people. I mean, it's just various type of celebrations.
Are there is there going to be reenacting of the signing of the Declaration of Independence? Do they do anything like that?
No, not that I'm aware of. Although we have the Declaration of Independence.
Maybe they do it in Philadelphia.
Perhaps they do it there. But the thing is, it's just really sort of a fun day, capped off, of course, by, you know, at just about dusk, or just past dusk, the incredible fireworks on the Washington Memorial.
And, right.
As well as usually there are performances, just before that at the Capitol, the foot of the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's really very nice, and they have some nice performers, and we can see it always on TV each year, but then they have these just incredible fireworks. And one year, when I was covering the White House, I had the opportunity, as a guest of Mr. Reagan at the time, sitting on the South Lawn, watching the fireworks. Mm-hmm. So,
you and Ronnie right there together,
well,
right?
And there were a few hundred other people.
And 100 of his other, 100 more of his best friends, right?
Yeah, and that's right. And he did have a lot of real good friends, in fact. But, just watching that from the South Lawn, and it's just beautiful fireworks, No matter, and I must say, there were some members of Congress as well as just other people from the press corps.
Right.
And, and young and old, but common denominator, the fireworks go off and you just hear almost as one, just beautiful.
I haven't seen that in person. I'll have to come over there one of these days and see that. Jim, we won't be as many people traveling to see that probably this year because everybody's so flummoxed about the gas prices. I mean, we got $4 plus gallon gas. I think oil went to record 140 something
yesterday.
Oh, right. And who knows what's going to happen next? But nobody knows what to do about the gas prices, do they?
No, and the thing is, and I cover energy very closely.
Yep.
We're in uncharted waters. Let me put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the market works. Prices are rising substantially, and motorists are cutting back. Gasoline consumption has fallen substantially, and
mm-hmm.
for the first time since 1990. Use of gasoline has fallen every single month of this year, right
mm-hmm.
through the end of June. It is
mm-hmm.
down very substantially. So demand is down, prices rise.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, and you know they are using a term called demand destruction. Have you heard
that
term,
right.
used, Jim?
Yes.
Tell the audience what that means.
I mean, it basically means the market works. Prices rise to a certain point at a certain time. You know, fast enough, it hurts, and people cut back. And it's not only motorists, but we've seen also with natural gas prices rising substantially, and there's demand destruction. That's the term.
And so eventually, when the demand drops to a certain level, allegedly, theoretically, hypothetically, the prices will come down after that.
But when
we've got the layers of speculation in the commodities that we do right now, mm-hmm. I'm not so sure if it even happens, if the lower prices even happen, I'm not so sure that it won't take a lot longer. What do you think?
Correct. It will take a lot longer, and the thing is that this is of grave concern to many people because, you might say, our markets have to work. The markets
mm-hmm.
have to work. If they don't, there is real concern in our economy. It is imperfect as we know, and it's not one-to-one.
Yep.
You know, prices rise today, and demand falls tomorrow, and then prices follow. But there must be some semblance of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's whatever, for instance, we've seen time and again in command economies, even certainly today in China, where you might say it does not work like that because, in that case, the hand of government that says
right.
no or says
right.
You
don't have to go to China for that. I mean, we're about to see that here in the United States, I'm afraid. I mean, the markets do work. They don't work always perfectly. They don't work as fast as we want to, but they eventually work correctly. But not if the government gets involved. And that's what I'm worried about. We're going to come back and talk about that right after these messages. I'm Jim Blasingame. Jim Ostroff is our guest. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's where you can find the show and all the things we do here are the newsletter, the blog, the Brain Trust, the articles, thousands of those that I've written or my Brain Trust members have written. You've got our hundreds of Brain Trust members. You've got thousands and thousands of interviews that I've conducted with my Brain Trust members over the last many, many years that you can find in categories that will help you find what the topic you're interested in. And by the way, those archives have no commercials in them. They're just clean as a hound's tooth, as my grandfather used to say. Just the content, basically. And so it makes it a little easier to listen to if you're going through a bunch of them. And then, of course, we have our knowledge base, askjim.biz.biz, where you get small business answers now. And by the way, it's smallbusinessadvocate.com, of course. And those of you listening on the internet, you already know this, but if you're not, you can. The simulcast is there on the website, and, of course, the daily replay. Jim Ostroff is our guest, folks. Jim is a longtime member of our Brain Trust, a good friend of ours, and associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And we're talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. And the topic today is the oil prices. At least that's the lead on the home page, the first page of the letter, of the Kiplinger letter. And, Jim, we're talking about what to do about all this. And, you know, I've had a number of experts on the show talking about this before. Let me tell you what Steve Forbes said on my show about 2 weeks ago. He said, I said, Steve, when oil was $65 a barrel a year and a half or 2 years ago, you were on the show, and I asked you how much of that was speculation, and you told me you thought it was anywhere from 15 to 20% was speculation. And I said, so now oil is at 135 at that point in time. I said, how much do you think that is speculation? And here's what Steve Forbes said. And Steve, as you know, Steve is not prone to hyperbole. Steve's a pretty serious guy, and a very knowledgeable guy. And he said, I think 2/3 of that is speculation.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah. Well, it is.
That's a lot.
It is. But again, we just say, because people ask me, well, you know, what's the alternative? I mean, do we have government say, okay, we're setting the price, or
we're
going to go and do? I mean, we have seen what happens when government steps in and does something even far short of that. And we ended up with very long gas lines and effective rationing. And that was just even the government dipping a finger in the market.
But you know, so, Jim, they're talking about supply and demand. Have you ever been turned down for gas at a gas station? Anybody in the world who wants gas can get it. There is no shortage. There is concern about shortages,
right.
And that's where the speculation lies. Now, I don't blame, Jim, I don't blame the speculators, because they're doing legal business. They can do that. And the truth is, the markets need speculators. They're a part of the organism of the marketplace. But here's the thing the government could do. The government could start allowing drilling in more places if the government just announced that they were going to start drilling. I've talked to several experts about this,
mm-hmm.
and they agree with me. If the government would just announce that over the next 24 months we're going to be drilling offshore, we're going to drill in Anwar, we're going to drill in these other places, they just announced it, the speculators would start going short instead of long,
right.
And I think things would start changing.
And let me say, you know, on that, we had a piece. It was actually in the letter last week. You may have discussed it. We had a big thing on our website. But I did a very long story that's now up there that says basically this. You know, the U.S. has the world's largest oil reserves, more than three times, you know, the size of what is contained by all of OPEC. We have enough oil resources to last, at current usage levels, to last the United States for 300 years without importing a barrel of oil.
Wow.
Now, of course, it would require more than just going, sticking a pipe in the ground and taking it out. Some of it is in tar sands, and which is being produced in Canada now. It certainly can be done, and it can be done profitably. A lot of this is in areas that, for which, you might say, oil companies are forbidden to look. They can't even look there. And there is oil in areas where private companies could do more. But people say, well, why don't they do that? It's not black and white. It's not simple. Just think, anybody in business, you say, look, sir, ma'am, we're asking you to make a major capital expenditure over the next 10 to 20 years. And, you know, for them, I mean, the numbers are in the tens or hundreds of billions of dollars. Oh, and by the way, though, we may change the rules on you at any time, and your work and your resource may be worthless or greatly constricted. You can't use it.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh, well, I think I'm still going to go ahead and bet my company. That's the problem right now.
Yeah.
Whatever, many people don't know what the ground rules are.
Well,
and they
I'll tell you
act
something.
Rationally.
Yeah.
And they
I'll tell you
rationally.
Something. Another thing, Jim, the reason we're not going to be drilling in other places is because, and folks, this is just truth. This is not a partisan statement.
Right.
The truth is the environmentalists have got control, they control a large part of the Democrat Party, which controls Congress right now. And so the greenies don't want more drilling. They don't want anything that could possibly, you know, one day pollute the environment. And that's their deal, and I understand that. But that's what they want. And they want on gas, so we'll use less of it. Well, that's what these higher prices are. They're effectively a tax. Stay with us. Quick break.
Jim Blasingame. He's the cyber king of small business. Google for small business expert, and he's tops on the list.
I guess that makes you number one.
He's number one on Google and number one in our hearts.
Aww.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for staying with me. Thanks for hanging out with me. We're visiting with our good friend Jim Ostroff, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jim, talking about this gas situation, and I was saying before we went to the break that that this increase in price is a tax. It's a huge, monstrous. And in fact, in the last 12 months, it's like a 50% tax. And wow. that is accomplished. This increase in tax in price has accomplished what a lot of environmentalists and greenies, I call them, and other people call them, a lot of greenies wanted. They'd like it if government passed a tax on gas, because that would raise the price, lower consumption, and force people to move towards alternative fuels, which I think that last part is a good idea. But why, Jim, why can't we do both of these? Why can't we have an energy policy? And this is on both parties. This is on both parties, Republican, Democrat,
and
they
Democrat.
Both failed us. Both parties have failed us when it comes to an energy plan. Why can't we come up with an intelligent, rational, logical plan that moves us towards alternative fuels but doesn't wreck the marketplace like what's happening right now?
What we have now
is a wrecked marketplace.
You hit the nail on the head.
And the money's going overseas,
that's
Jim.
Right.
Is putting our corporations in jeopardy, and we're borrowing our money back. They're buying us our equity from us with the money we're giving them.
That's right.
If we drilled on our own lands, we could keep that money.
It's not a pittance. We're talking hundreds of billions of dollars
yes.
a year in rising that's
yep.
going
yep.
overseas,
yep.
And of course there are national security issues as well. And the thing I must say, having covered this for many years, I should say that members of both parties have basically just kicked the ball or kicked the can down the road.
Yeah,
you know, for the next
right.
year or two or this or that, and nothing has been done. And you might say our energy situation has become more dire.
Right.
We certainly could transition. You know, but the point here is that it can, you know, it cannot be done in a year or 5 or even 10 years. We are talking decades. And
yeah.
it's not just saying, oh, that'll be disruptive. No, it will take that long to develop various alternatives that,
right.
you know, and do so in a way that won't wreck people's lives.
Right. That's exactly
it can be
right.
done, and it can be very profitable.
But we also have the government talking about, tax any gouging laws, any price gouging laws,
and
suing OPEC and windfall not windfall but
well,
profit taxes
right.
I guess windfall profit taxes on the oil companies instead
right.
of doing their job, they're trying to find villains somewhere else.
And it's the answer is it's us. But
yeah.
I'm saying in so many ways.
It's
but
like Pogo
here,
said. It's
right.
like Pogo I'm, said. The, we've
right.
seen the enemy, and he's us.
And
Jim,
he's
let's move over and talk about on page 2. We'll talk about human resources. Talk about this expansion for protection of the disabled in the workplace. What do you know about that?
In response to some recent Supreme Court decisions that you might say further restrict those who are covered or considered disabled under the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act. Congress is moving to try to swiftly move ahead on a bill that the president will very much sign in about 2 weeks. It broadens the definition of disability, and it basically means that they would be covering under the act people with situations and diseases such as, heart ailments or epilepsy,
mm.
and because they're saying a turn of the law as it was written excluded people such as that. So the point is that, if you have employees who have various serious but treatable illnesses that
right.
they're covered by ADA, which means that you have to make accommodation for them in your facilities and things like that. It's beyond saying, okay, you have to have a certain door or an exit.
Right.
It just broadens that.
Well, and it's someone when ADA was passed, what, about 15 years or so ago, somebody called it the lawyer retirement law.
Well, I should say that it certainly opens the door for many employees, workers to say that they were denied this or that, and they're suing.
Well, people shouldn't be mistreated, but sometimes I think the ADA goes too far with some of the things that it does. Stand by, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about unions. You know how much I love talking about unions. How are they doing? Well, they're fighting with each other. How about that? I actually enjoy that kind of a cat fight. 20 till the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. Little Robert Cray bringing us back. Serious blues licks there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm having a great visit with our good friend Jim Ostroff, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And I like to tell you about their websites because it's a good one, kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. And that's where you can go to find all the things that they do at Kiplinger, including their publications, like the letter that Jim and I work off of with Jim and with Joan Pride every week. The Kiplinger letter has been around since 1923, I guess it is.
That is correct.
Yeah, and they're just about to have an 85th anniversary, and that's the weekly flagship. Of course, they've got four biweekly letters now, the California letter, the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the biofuels letter, which I'm encouraging them to change to the alternative fuels letter.
Right.
And then they got a magazine, right, Jim?
Right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance.
Which you can subscribe to or find in newsstands. Give us that phone number, Jim.
Yeah, it is 800-544-0155.
So, folks, check it out. You can subscribe. They'll give you a 30-day free trial, and if you don't like it, you can get out of it. It's easy. Jim, let's move on and talk about infighting among labor unions. I love it when labor unions fight amongst each other. This is a good thing, I think.
Right.
Tell us about what's going on.
We're seeing some battle royale among various groups, the Screen Actors Guild, and AFTRA, American Federation Television and Radio Artists. And
talk about some wacky unions.
Well,
you get a bunch of actors together in unions.
Actors.
I mean, that's like a talk about a goat roping. Boy, that's
right.
Got
actors and TV
a little rumble with those two guys getting together. On the West Side there on the West Side Story.
Right,
I'd love to
right,
see a rumble with those.
You know? Yeah, when they get going, there's no stopping them. They'll write and act you to death.
Right.
And I mean, then also we have Service Employees International Union and the California Nurses Association, over organizing in Nevada and Ohio, and then of course the U.S. Airways pilots basically quit their union of nearly 60 years, the Airline Pilots Association, and created their own thing here. And basically this, you have a situation where in this country union membership continues to decline, and unions...
What's it down now, below 10%?
It might be, I think it's
somewhere around, it's below 10% now, I think, 8 or 9, 3, I may be wrong, but it's about a third or less, it's a third to a fourth of what it was, say, 25 years ago.
Well, yeah, it is, and heading
in the right direction as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let me just say, you have a situation here where you have groups like it could be whether it, and I'm just these big the mine workers or AFL or others that are now encroaching on each other's turf. The UAW is within that, but. And for members, they're fighting for members, and meanwhile, there are many, I'll just say, members of unions, a rank and file, who they look and they say, wait a minute, I'm paying dues. In many cases, I have to pay dues. where is my job security?
What am I getting
in return? And where are my wage increases? You know, that's what.
They're probably looking at their friends in another working for another company that's not union with better deals. But here's the other thing, Jim. We have to talk about this before we go, and this is something you guys report on, and I have too in the past. The Employee Free Choice Act, which has not been passed yet, but it's being debated, folks. This is an egregious anti-American communist act, as far as I'm concerned, and Jim, this is where they want to pass a law that prevents you from voting in a secret ballot for or against unions. Guido could stand there with the form, hand it to you, and say, "Sign this, vote." He can stand there and watch you vote for or against. Now that is a horrible. But then they actually have the chutzpah, Jim, to call it the Free Choice Act. And that is the opposite of free choice.
And I should say, you know, that has been batted back a few times now in, you know, recent years.
Yeah.
And I'll just say, of course, because of the fact that there are a sufficient number of Republicans to block it and a president who said, "I will not sign it," that may change next year.
One of the pillars of our... of the structure of what is all of what is America is the secret ballot. It is one of the icons of the foundation of our country.
And the
history and the legacy and the traditions is the secret ballot, and they're trying to take that away in the workplace.
I don't understand then what if we do that, why, I mean, we just go to the polls for all different elections for public officials. Why don't we have to vote in public? I mean,
exactly.
Or just write it down there.
Well, who knows? Maybe that's coming next. Jim, let's move down and talk about what the IRS is doing for the standard mileage rate for business. It's going up, isn't it?
Well, it is, and you know, it's going to be. Well, let me just say, you know, it's raising the rate for driving to it's 58.5 cents per mile for the last 6 months of this year, and that's an increase of 8 cents, accounting mm-hmm. for dramatic increase in gasoline prices. You know, and actually that is, again, it's very rare that the IRS would do that mid-year. But,
mid-year,
you know, they recognize that prices are moving higher. And also increase for the rate for medical and moving expenses.
Because of these higher prices.
That's the inflationary
situation. Stand by, Jim Oster. Folks, we're going to take a quick break right back and wrap up all of this with some more good information from Kiplinger and our good friend Jim Oster. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for staying with me. If you just tuned in, well, you caught us at the end here as we're about to wrap up with our good friend Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, over on page 3, you guys report on the kind of influence the next president will have on the Federal Reserve Board, our central bank here in the United States, the Federal Reserve Board. We actually have some issues right now, Jim, because there are some seats that are empty on the Federal Reserve Board that can't get approved.
Well, yeah, they can't.
I think there are three empty ones right now, aren't there?
There are, and basically, I mean, I'll just say, not taking any sides, but the Democrats say, no way. We believe we will have a president in the White House next year, and we want that person. We want him to make that decision. So they will not allow any those seats to be filled, not now. And therefore, I'm saying, you know, the next president will be able to name the next chairman of the Federal Reserve, because
the chairman of the Federal Reserve works at the pleasure of the president.
And so,
folks, this is another example of one of the things that you need to keep in mind as you consider who to vote for president, is you need to think about things like this. Like we've talked about the courts, we've talked about the oil and drilling and environmental issues and et cetera, et cetera. This is one of the things you need to pay attention to with regard to who the next president is going to be, is how, you know, what kind of people you want to see managing the Federal Reserve Board, Federal Reserve Bank.
The chairman plus 4 of 7 members. The next president will have effective control initially over the Federal Reserve.
Yep. Yep.
And it,
that's right.
It makes a difference. It will make a difference.
It does.
And but particularly, you know, there are many, and it may be boring, but banking regulations, credit card changes, you know, and other things, philosophy about inflation and inflation fighting and credit. And that's,
right.
That's all to be determined. And there will be potentially, I mean, well, there will be some substantial change. You'll have at least four new members, and,
right.
and there could be a new chairman.
Exactly. No, Mr. Bernanke, his career as a Fed chairman could be short-lived.
It could be.
Jim, let's move down and talk about the economy. You guys are saying that you think second quarter is going to show about a 1% gain, which we actually now know. I think first quarter came in at about 1% growth, which, folks, is not great, but that's a long way from a recession, right?
That is correct. And people, I must say, once again, the U.S. economy and consumers and businesses have surprised many people. They were saying it's a lead pipe cinch in recession, and the economy grew in the first quarter. You know, again, it didn't barely, but it did grow. It certainly did not shrink.
And Jim, I want to remind people that the last week of December, when I made my predictions, I predicted that we would not have a recession in 2008.
So far, so good.
and yeah, exactly. That's exactly
it,
right.
It looks like that's the case.
There's some things that people can still do that you guys point out here, remind folks about, and that's the increased expensing that small business owners can do through as a result of changes in Section 179. Folks, be sure to talk to your financial people, your tax people, about as you consider needing new equipment, buying new equipment, growing your business in a tough economy. There are new tax advantages that could really help you a lot. There are some great things, some accelerated depreciation, some expensing opportunities in Section 179. Please check those things out.
Very important. Very important.
Yep. And, Jim, let's move down to the bottom of page 3 and talk about small businesses and the telecom services. What's happening there?
Well, I said, you know, we say that small businesses are in the catbird seat with respect to telecom, and basically, you know, cable and phone firms are really fighting it out for new customers, as you'd expect. And as a result, that particularly for small firms, which have, you might say, a phone, internet, mobile phone coverage, companies are doing deals. The providers are doing deals
right.
on that. Because they want your business now, and they hope they'll keep you for the long term. So, for instance, you know, increase the speed of the various internet, the so-called T1 lines, by even by 30 times the speed as they do now for the largest of firms, and
yep.
it'll probably be at a lower cost than you're paying today.
And Jim, we're taking advantage of that because we have what's called a fractional T1. We have part of a T1,
right.
and they busted up a T1 and given me a lower price, and I've still got all the bandwidth I need.
That's right.
Yeah.
So,
hey, Jim, I got to wrap things up. We're coming up on the end of the hour. Thank you again for being here. It's always a pleasure to have you as part of our day.
Thank you all.
Good job. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and as you know, this program is for you. And one more thing, always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.